Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a new study from the Pew Research Center that finds women are now the primary breadwinners in almost half of all American households. June Carbone, Chair of Law, the Constitution and Society at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and co-author of Red Families versus Blue Families, Legal Polarization and the Creation of Culture, joins us to discuss this tectonic shift in our economy and family life. Then we will speak with pioneering AIDS researcher Dr. Charles Vanderhorst, Professor of Medicine at the University of North Carolina Center for Infectious Diseases. He was recently arrested inside the North Carolina State House protesting against laws that hurt children and the poor that have been passed since the Republicans captured all three branches of government and began a legislative assault on the poor, the unemployed, public education, and voting rights in a flurry of bills that are transforming North Carolina into a model of right-wing governance. Then finally, Stephen Braun, an investigative reporter with the Associated Press, who was previously the national security editor of the AP and author of a book about the notorious Russian arms dealer Viktor Bout, Merchants of Death, Money, Guns, Planes, and the Man Who Makes War Possible, joins us to discuss Russia's arms sales to Syria at the same time that the U.S. and Russia are trying to broker a peace conference in Geneva between the Syrian sides fighting to the death in a bloody civil war. And joining us now is June Carbone, the Edward A. Smith Missouri Chair of Law, the Constitution and Society at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. She writes extensively about legal issues surrounding marriage, divorce, and family organization, especially within the context of the recent revolutions in biotechnology. She is the author of From Partners to Parents, The Second Revolution in Family Law, and co-author of the fourth edition of Family Law. Her latest book, along with Professor Naomi Kahn, is Red Families versus Blue Families, Legal Polarization and the Creation of Culture. Welcome to Background Briefing, June Carbone.
Happy to be here.
And this extraordinary study that's come out from the Pew Research Institute that indicates that more than 40% of U.S. households with children rely on the woman as the chief or only source of income in 2011, up from 11% in 1960. So almost half of America's women are the primary breadwinner today.
Yes, although that's a little misleading. What it indicates is in those households with children, which includes both women who have never married and women who are married and have a spouse in the household who also is an income earner. So it includes two really different groups.
But in general, the fact that it's up 40% from 11% in 1960 would indicate a tectonic shift in social behavior, to say the least.
Absolutely.
And expand on that. What do you think is driving this change?
Well, you have to start with the fact that women are in the workforce. I mean, we treat the family as though it never changes, but the stay-at-home mom is an invention of the 19th century. When the Industrial Revolution hit, the productive activities, think of the farm, making clothes, they went to the factories, and they left. And the home was recreated with the men who used to be home overseeing the farm and the women and the shop. The men left, and we think of the home as this area for child-rearing. But in fact, that's really an anomaly. The home used to be where production took place, and the men and women both worked in the home. Then the men left, and now the women are joining the men in the workforce. And that's a long-scale permanent shift. But lots of other things are happening with the family at the same time.
Well, in many ways, a lot of the analysis about what's happening in our incredibly polarized politics and the hostility that the right wing of the Republican Party have towards Obama is predicated, the Tea Party, is predicated upon the fear of the extinction of the white man's hegemony over economic and social and political life here in the United States. And in many ways, it feels like there's always been this atavistic strain on the conservative right in this country that Ronald Reagan, of course, ran on this shining city on the hill, on this leave it to beaver America, going back to the days of Ozzie and Harriet, the nuclear family, which was very distorted in as much as back then the Latinos and African Americans weren't even counted. So is this realization of this what a lot of people today are thinking, well, boy, this is a pretty earth-shattering statistic here coming from the Pew Research Center. Should we not be taken by surprise, and are we lulled into a false universe because of the atavism of the Ronald Reagans, et cetera?
Well, it's not just that. It's also that what's happening at the top and what's happening in the middle are really different. The one place where men still really out-earn women is at the top. The gender gap in wages has increased at the top, and that group roughly, certainly the entire top 10%, you see men pulling ahead of women in wages, and women still think they marry well when they marry a man who earns more than they do. And so you think of the Romneys as the representative of that, and you think of the Rush Limbaughs as saying that's what we want. But for the rest of the country, that's not real. The gender gap in wages has been narrowing. It's been widening at the top, but narrowing everywhere else. And you really need two incomes. So there are two kinds of myths out there. One is, and you hear this, the Southern Baptists are the most articulate about it, if just women would learn to defer to their husbands, to not ask the men to help out too much around the home, to make them feel good that they're still the head of the family, everything would be right with the family. And that's just not happening. The second myth, and you hear this from Charles Murray, and you hear it from all those people who rail about welfare, if we starve the kids, the women will have to marry the men. And instead, the women have decided to go to work. They can't rely on the men. That's why they're not marrying them. But there's this myth out there that the women are somehow all on welfare, and if we take away the food stamps, they will rediscover marriage. You know, they're discovering the third shift.
Well, but apparently, according to this Pew study, just 28% of Americans surveyed by Pew agreed that it is generally better for a marriage if the husband earns more than his wife. So it seems to me that the other myth that's being shattered here is the myth of the stability of the marriage requires the man.
Well, you know, that's actually a very controversial thing, because we've been looking at those numbers, and what we're finding is, yes, there's a huge shift in attitudes, and that's what people say. And there are lots of marriages that are now called seesaw marriages. You know, one of the big things that's changed is employment stability. It's very hard to stay in a single job for a long time these days. Whether you're at the top or you're at the bottom, if you're at the bottom, you get laid off a lot. If you're at the top, you move more often than you used to in another era because you need to take the opportunities that come to stay ahead of the game. And so as people move, men and women trade off. Husband's laid off, woman works more. Husband has a great opportunity in another city, the wife may move with him, and she's taking care of the kids for a while. They trade off. So when you look at married couples, the temporary turning in and out of the labor market in accordance with opportunities doesn't have much effect on family stability. But when you look at long-term changes and you see men who are moving in and out of the labor force involuntarily, that predicts divorce. You see that the more women are in the labor force, the less housework they do until they start earning more than their husbands, then they start doing more housework. And so we're still sorting through what these changes mean.
Again, I'm speaking with June Carbone, the Edward A. Smith Missouri Chair of Law, the Constitution, and Society of the University of Missouri, Kansas City. She writes extensively about the legal issues surrounding marriage, divorce, and family organization, especially within the context of the recent revolutions in biotechnology. She's the author of From Partners to Parents, The Second Revolution in Family Law, and co-author of the fourth edition of Family Law. Her latest book with Professor Naomi Kahn is Red Families versus Blue Families, Legal Polarization and the Creation of Culture. So let's look at the red family, blue family divide. Of course, red families being in red states, one would think that they were influenced by the pulpit and by religious fundamentalism, which has its patriarchal attributes, to be sure. So is there a difference here, or is this just rhetoric on the part of, you know, the Pat Robinsons of the world who want women to be submissive?
Well, there is a different set of attitudes. And rather than just say different parts of the country, I think we're looking at two differences that do matter, religion and class. So if we look at religion, you certainly see an emphasis in traditional religions that the woman must defer to the man. And you see that if the husband and wife both go to the same church, that tends to have a good effect on family stability. But here's the kicker. When I drive around rural Missouri and I turn on the radio, you hear a lot of religious talk radio, and the message that is really out there is a whole lot of men who aren't doing very well, and they want to feel better about themselves. And there's this outrage. If they're drinking too much, if they've lost their job, if the wife has left them or the girlfriend's left them because they're not earning, you know, they're not reliable. There is a message out there, what you need is religion. A man has to be a man. And when he's a man, the women will defer to him. That message is really powerful in rural America. But it's not working very well with men who can't hold a steady job because the jobs aren't there. They feel unsuccessful, and they stop attending church even if they're still religious. So, you know, the people who are out there who are ready for that are the people who are trying to hang on and feel pretty successful. When you look at the people who are left out of this economy, they're not going to church, and even if they say things like that, they're not making the family work. You need jobs for there to be traditional roles.
So that kind of makes sense then in terms of people like Joel Osteen, the prosperity gospel. You know, God wants you to be a winner, not a whiner. That's the message then, to get the men back into the church and feeling good about themselves.
That's right. And, you know, and the women, you know, if you've got a guy who's doing okay, women have to defer to him. But, you know, there's another side to that, and that's the message that you don't have a job, you're not doing very well in this economy, it's your fault.
Well, that's pervasive on every level, though, isn't it? In conservative circles, that's why we don't have a social safety net in the United States, right, like the Europeans do. They don't have social democracy. Isn't that a part of that general kind of philosophy of, you know, laissez-faire economics and people, in effect, if they're poor, it's their fault?
Mm-hmm. No, that's the message. And there's a wonderful editorial that's been repeated a couple of times in the New York Post. And it basically says teen births aren't the problem. You know, if the parents just go to work, teen births, we can afford them. It's the parents not working we can't afford. And you're thinking, okay, where is this 19-year-old supposed to get a job? The jobs aren't there, but the myth is out there that work is there. You know, you can get your father to lend you money to start a business. You can go pick crops for minimum wage. You know, you can make a go of it. That's the great myth that's out there.
Right. Well, those myths were propagated by Romney, I remember, on the stump. So as a father of a daughter who just graduated, is now a medical doctor, most of her class were women. This Pew report says women are more likely than men to get college degrees. That would seem to be the case today.
Yes, although there's something else going on, too, that makes those statistics look a little different. If you go back, and we've only gotten the figure for 2004. We haven't seen an update. But what we saw in 2004 was a real change. If you look at families who make more than $70,000 a year, they're sending about the same number of boys and girls to college, 51-49 girls, and for African Americans it's 52-48, almost no difference. The place where the boys aren't going to college are from the families in the middle, below $70,000 a year. There's a fall-off. That's where the fall-off is occurring, is from working-class families, from middle America, and from poorer America. At the top, the boys are still going to college. It's those working class families. The girls are going and not the boys.
So what could be done then to break the glass ceiling within the elite? And what explains the fact that the glass ceiling exists within the elite? Is it simply because the elite is the elite and that they...
and the system's rigged.
The system's rigged.
Naomi and I did a little piece for the New York Times on how the wage gap's increasing. And right now it's increasing for women as a whole, which is new. For the last 20 years, it's been increasing for men at the top, are making more. And when you break down those numbers, here's what you find. You find that wages that are competitively set on the basis of skills, think engineers, think pharmacists, women do quite well. You take engineers, the number of women engineers is not growing, but women engineers who are there make 95% of what the men make. Take a look at the financial sector. Financial sector is where it's rigged. CEOs, where the board sets the salaries, it's not a market. It's a board, and the board sets the salaries for the CEOs, and then they go back home and they get their company board to raise their salaries. Where you see that, where you see it's not a competitive market for skills, the wage gap's growing. Where it's skills and the market is tight, women make almost as much as men do. It's very close, once you control for the number of hours worked. So we all know there's a system out there. When you game the system, women don't do as well.
So in other words, the Oprah Winfrey's and the new head of Yahoo, Marissa Meyer, they're kind of window dressing. It's just not a reality that there's equal opportunity at the top.
No, and, I talked to somebody who's a Harvard Law School professor, and she was saying, you know what the guys do? They go and they get an offer someplace else, and they come back to the Harvard faculty and say, you've got to meet this salary or I'm going to leave. She said, you know, in the old days, Harvard met the offer from someplace else and raised everybody's salary. Women did just fine. You know, when they were treated just like the guys, they did just fine, and they did the same amount of work. When it became a star game, now let's see how many outside offers you can rack up so that you get more from the home institution or you jump ship every couple of years. When it shifts in favor of doing that, then women lose out.
Well, in terms of the divide, though, that your most recent book, June Carbone, along with Professor Naomi Kahn, Red Families versus Blue Families, Legal Polarization and the Creation of Culture. Sometimes living out here on the West Coast, on the left coast, in the California Republic, you start to feel that you're in a different country. You know, the state has a surplus. We have very different politics from the rest of the country. And you know, I think about a sixth of the world's economy. The state of California is equal to, you know, I think it's in sixth place in terms of an economy. And the impression I get, and you may need to correct me here, is that we're sort of moving into the 21st century, and a lot of the people in the red states are moving back to the 14th century, and the American Taliban are alive and well in setting moral standards. And the irony is, of course, in the state of Mississippi, in the heart of the red states, I believe there's even a greater divorce than there is, for example, in California or in New York. So are there two Americas drifting in opposite directions?
Yes, and they're getting worse. What's happening here in the heartland, is Kansas. Governor Brownback is among the most radical governors in the country, trying to eliminate the state income tax with funding from the Koch brothers. They had a little coup in the legislature where they got rid of the moderate Republicans. So now that the legislature is under the control of the really right wing, and they can't pass a budget because Brownback's plan was, let's make all the fat cats really rich, get rid of the income tax, but raise or keep the sales tax high on poorer people. And the radical legislature, his handpicked supporters, aren't passing this measure to keep the increase in the sales tax, which will bankrupt the state budget. Now, you ask yourself, what's in Kansas now? The state is depopulating in the rural areas. What's in Kansas now are some of the best public schools in the country, and Brownback claims to support funding for education, but the budget that's there can't support the schools they have now. And you've got the Koch brothers, who control the interior of the state that's losing population. And Missouri has a Republican legislature, a Democratic governor, and the Republican legislature is saying, me too, let's get rid of our sales tax so we can compete with Kansas. And what that will do is it will bankrupt the future. You know, we don't have, we have a bridge that collapsed in Missouri recently. We don't have money to fix it. There's the recession. There's been a defunding of higher education, of schools in the state. The economy is recovering if you gut the sales tax, I mean, gut the income tax and don't raise the sales tax. There won't be the money for education. There won't be the foundation for the future. When I came, Missouri was razor thin, a battleground state. Today, Missouri is solidly red because the best educated of the students leave for college and don't come back.
Well, June Carbone, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
I enjoyed it. I admire what you're doing. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Again, I've been speaking with June Carbone, who's the Edward A. Smith Missouri Chair of Law, the Constitution, and Society at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. She writes extensively about the legal issues surrounding marriage, divorce, and family organization, especially within the context of the recent revolutions in biotechnology. She's the author of From Partners to Parents, The Second Revolution in Family Law, and co-author of the fourth edition of Family Law. She, along with Professor Naomi Kahn, are the co-authors of Red Families versus Blue Families, Legal Polarization and the Creation of Culture. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with a prominent doctor who was arrested inside the North Carolina State House protesting against radical Republican programs that hurt children and the poor.
To be a woman and to be turned down. Change your name when so many love you. Is it the same? It's the woman in you that makes you wanna play this game.